بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله الأمين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We move on inshallah today to another section of the Book of Purity, and that is the major purity which deals with ghusl. So a lot of the Islamic terminology may be a little bit strange for those who are not used to Arabic. So when we say janabah, this is the state of sexual impurity, janabah. And when we say a person is junub, we're describing the person himself to be in the state of sexual impurity. And we have ghusl. And ghusl is the total bath, the obligatory or mandatory bath where a person takes so that he would uplift the state of sexual impurity or the state of janaba. And is ghusl only for the state of janaba? Well, ghusl itself can be for mandatory ghusl and it can be voluntary ghusl. So the mandatory ghusl is for the things that you know of, such as, first of all, the state of janaba, sexual impurity, or when a woman who is in her menses or in post-delivery bleeding, that when the bleeding stops and she's pure, she has to take this ghusl. And it's an issue of dispute whether a non-Muslim, when he accepts Islam, is it mandatory for him to take ghusl or not? And the most authentic opinion and the safest is that it is mandatory for him to take ghusl, because even if he says La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, he is in the state of sexual impurity. He never took a ghusl, proper ghusl before, so it is mandatory for him to do that. And also in the case of washing a dead body, is it mandatory or not? Some schools of thought say it is mandatory because this is backed by a hadith where the Prophet says, Al-Sam, whoever washes a dead body must perform ghusl, and whoever carries a funeral must perform wudu. This hadith is authentic, but it was abrogated. That was in the beginning. And then the Prophet said, Khalas, there is no need for that. Whoever washes a dead person, a dead Muslim, he does not have to perform ghusl, because the Muslim is pure, and this was abrogated. So we move on to hadith number 31, hadith of Aisha. And who will read it for us? Yes, Muhammad.
Aisha radhiyallahu anha said, whenever Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam took the bath of janaba, he cleaned his hands and then performed ablution like that for prayer, and then rubbed his hair till he felt that the whole skin of the head had become wet. Then he would pour water 3 times and then wash the rest of the body. Aisha radhiyallahu anha further said, I and Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to take a bath from a single water container from which we took water simultaneously.
Okay, this hadith is informing us about a particular way of doing ghusl. And we will have the hadith of Maymuna, may Allah be pleased with her, also that describes it, but a little bit differently. As in the case of Uthman, may Allah be pleased with him, telling us about the wudu of the Prophet, and Abdullah ibn Zayd telling it a little bit different. In this, we know that the Sharia, Islam, is so rich that it is not rigid and limited in this way or that way. It gives you a variety of choices. But as Muslims, you do not have the choice to go outside the loop of these choices. These choices are for you to choose. You want to wash your hands once, twice, or 3 times, it's up to you. But don't do 4 times. And don't definitely do less than 1 time, because you will not be doing it. Likewise, in offering ghusl, we mentioned the ghusl which is mandatory, and we forgot to mention the ghusl that is voluntary. Can you remind me? Yes, before Eid prayer. This is an issue of dispute among scholars, whether it is part of the Sunnah or not, because there isn't any specific hadith, but there is a specific hadith in what prayer? Jum'ah. Jum'ah prayer is without doubt. It is recommended, and some schools of thought make it mandatory. But the most authentic opinion is that it is voluntary and recommended. So this is for Jum'ah, as the brother said. Some scholars said even for Eid, it is voluntary. And so on, something we do once in a lifetime, at least, before making ihram. Before making ihram for Umrah or for Hajj, the sunnah is that you wash, even if a woman in her menses. Imagine, if a woman in her menstruation, she's not going to pray, she's not going to fast. Yet before making ihram, the sunnah for her is to take ghusl, to make ghusl, and a number of different things. So, going back to hadith of Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her. What is the definition of ghusl in Arabic? It is to wash your whole body with water. So scholars from this linguistic definition came up with the conclusion that there is one ghusl, which is according to Sunnah, like in the case of Hadith Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her. And there is one ghusl that is sufficient to uplift the sexual impurity, though it is not in accordance to the Sunnah. How is that? The acceptable minimum requirement for ghusl is to go and dip yourself in the sea and come out, turn the water in your mouth, inhale and blow the water from your nose, and that is it. You've committed ghusl. So, scholars say if you stand under the shower with the intention of ghusl, and you shower yourself totally, and make a madmada and istinshaq and istinthar for your nose, and leave, this is valid ghusl. But this is not the sunnah. So what is the sunnah? We go back to the hadith of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. First of all, what is the first thing the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam would do before making ghusl? Washing the hands. And this is always so that you will purify your hands before putting it in the vessel. After washing his hands, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, in this hadith. Now, I'm referring only to this hadith, because there is the hadith of Maimuna where he washes his private parts first before making wudu. But we will stay with this hadith. So the Prophet performs wudu, normal wudu. And here it does not say if he includes his feet or not. So we assume that he includes his feet. So he performs normal wudu, yet he's still in the state of janaba. Then he takes a scoop of water and he rubs his head so that until he feels that the skin itself, the roots of the hair, has been moisturized with water, have been wet, then he takes 3 scoops of water and pours it all over his head. After that, he washes all of his body, and that is his ghusl. Very simple. She says that she and the Prophet ﷺ used to wash from the same container. They used to make ghusl from the same container. And from this, scholars say that it is permissible for a man to see his wife nude, and for the wife to see her husband nude, because the man and his wife don't have any awrah. And that is why it is part of the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ to bathe with your wife. This is part of the Prophet's sunnah. Unfortunately, nowadays, men and women are so apart. Their emotions are very rigid. We neglect a lot of the things that the Prophet used to do, alayhi salatu wasalam. Among them, for example, the Prophet used to eat with Aisha. And whenever she took a bite from a piece of meat, he would take that meat and look where she put her mouth, and he would eat from that. And if she drinks milk, he would take the cup and watches where she put her lips and drink from the same place. Do we do this nowadays? You crazy, Sheikh? What do you mean by do we do this? If my wife eats from the plate with a spoon, I go and tell her, bring me another spoon, please. She says, no, you can use mine. So I know I can use yours. I don't want to use yours. Go and bring another one that's clean. Is this the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ? Definitely not. And that is why our relationship between the husbands and wife are very bad, are very sad. There is a distance between the spouses. There isn't anything except maybe the physical relationship that would probably take a couple of minutes and that is it. Then the rest of the day, there is no connection. And this is wrong. The relationship with your spouse should be much, much closer than that, because Allah described it in the Quran, هُنَّ لِبَاسٌ لَكُمْ وَأَنْتُمْ لِبَاسٌ لَهُنْ, that they and you are garments for each other. You know each other's shortcomings and you know each other's faults, and no one else can share this knowledge except you. We move on to the second hadith, the hadith of Maymuna. Maymuna, who is Maymuna bint al-Harith, by the way? Do we know anything about her? How is she related to the Prophet ﷺ? Well, to know this, you have to wait until we break, so stay tuned.